an excerpt from Crashing Down by Meg O'Brien. There was a knock at the door. Tanner crossed the large living room of the deluxe suite and opened it. "Vincent," he sighed, "come in." The bodyguard stepped into the room. "How did it go?" Tanner asked, half dreading the answer.
"Without a hitch," Petrelli said. "I slipped something into her water."
"You managed to find a sedative? You put enough in to..." Tanner fell silent. Petrelli shook his head.
"There were too many nurses and other staff around. I couldn't risk it. It was hard enough just getting her away from everybody. Besides, a sedative strong enough to kill her would have shown up in an autopsy, and there would have been an investigation. What I gave her won't leave a trace after the first hour or two."
The man looked worried, Tanner thought. "I don't understand. What exactly did you give her?"
I bought something off the streets."
"Off the streets?" Tanner's voice rose in alarm.
"It's not that hard, sir. Not in a beach town. Don't worry. The guy I got it from won't remember." Petrelli laughed. "Shut. He can't even remember his own name."
"That's not what I'm worried about. For God's sake, man, what the hell did you give the woman?"
A couple of spinners."
"Spinners." Tanner's tone was icy. "What the hell are spinners?"
"They're sort of a hallucinogen.
Tanner paled.
"A hallucinogen? Christ almighty, man, I wanted her dead, not jumping off buildings." "It's not like that, sir. This is something new. Don't worry. It'll have her cruising like crazy. Then it'll knock her out."
"May I remind you," Tanner said angrily, "that the whole idea was to remove the woman permanently? I can't have her talking about what Breen did to her granddaughter now that she's starting to recover. Anyone who can talk about Breen's past must be removed. That was the whole point, for God's sake."
"I told you, sir. Don't worry."
"Don't worry. If, as you say, this hallucinogen doesn't kill her..."
"That's the beauty of it, sir. We're going to let the tide do that. It's just about due in, and where she is, she'll be swimming with the fishes before she ever comes to."
Tanner shook his head. "This is too damned risky. If someone finds her first, while she's still under the influence,
they'll think she's a confused old lady. No harm, no foul. We'll just try again."
"Damn it, man. There may not be time for that." Tanner began to pace. "I am not happy with this, Vincent." The man was a loose cannon. Why hadn't he seen that? Anything could happen now. Anything at all.
Horton Hatches the Egg by Dr. Seuss. Sighed Maisie, a lazy bird hatching an egg.
"I'm tired and I'm bored, and I've kinks in my leg from sitting, just sitting here day after day. It's work. How I hate it. I'd much rather play. I'd take a vacation, fly off for a rest, if I could find someone to stay on my nest. If I could find someone, I'd fly away free."
Then Horton the elephant passed by her tree.
"Hello," called the lazy bird, smiling her best. "You've nothing to do, and I do need a rest. Would you like to sit on the egg in my nest?"
The elephant laughed.
"Why, of all silly things, I haven't feathers and I haven't wings. Me on your egg? Why, that doesn't make sense. Your egg is so small, ma'am, and I'm so immense."
"Tut, tut," answered Maisie. "I know you're not small, but I'm sure you can do it. No trouble at all. Just sit on it softly. You're gentle and kind. Come, be a good fellow. I know you won't mind."
"I can't,"
said the elephant. "Please," begged the bird. "I won't be gone long, sir. I give you my word. I'll hurry right back. Why, I'll never be missed."
"Very well," said the elephant. "Since you insist, you want a vacation. Go fly off and take it. I'll sit on your egg, and I'll try not to break it. I'll stay and be faithful. I mean what I say."
Toodaloo! Sang out Maisie and fluttered away.
The first thing to do, murmured Horton. Let's see. The first thing to do is to prop up this tree and make it much stronger. That has to be done. Before I get on it, I must weigh a ton.
Then carefully, tenderly, gently he crept up the trunk to the nest where the little egg slept. Then Horton the elephant smiled.
Now that's that.
And he sat, and he sat, and he sat, and he sat, and he sat all that day, and he kept the egg warm. And he sat all that night through a terrible storm. It poured, and it lightninged, it thundered, it rumbled.
Well, this isn't much fun,
the poor elephant grumbled.
I wish he'd come back, 'cause I'm cold and I'm wet. I hope that Maisie bird doesn't forget.
But Maisie by this time was far beyond reach, enjoying the sunshine way off in Palm Beach, and having such fun, such a wonderful rest, decided she'd never go back to her nest. So Horton kept sitting there day after day, and soon it was autumn, the leaves blew away, and then came the winter, the snow and the sleet, and icicles hung from his trunk and his feet. But Horton kept sitting and said with a sneeze,
I'll stay on this egg and I won't let it freeze. I meant what I said and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%.
So poor Horton sat there the whole winter through. And then came the springtime with troubles anew. His friends gathered round, and they shouted with glee.
Look, Horton the elephant's up in a tree!
They taunted, they teased him, they yelled, How absurd! Old Horton the elephant thinks he's a bird! They laughed and they laughed, then they all ran away. And Horton was lonely. He wanted to play. But he sat on the egg and continued to say,
I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. An elephant's faithful 100%. No matter what happens, this egg must be tended.
But poor Horton's troubles were far, far from ended. For while Horton sat there, so faithful, so kind, 3 hunters came sneaking up softly behind.
An excerpt from Op Center by Tom Clancy.
You took one of the bulletproof vests, Aideen said as she ran toward McCaskey.
Never travel without it,
McCaskey said. He winced as she helped him to his feet.
I put it on before I came here. After he shot me, I figured I'd lie low and wait for something like this.
Glad I didn't just kick out the goggles, Aideen said. Ferdinand ran past them to the priest. Father Noberto was standing just inside the doorway, staring down at the body of General Amadori. He knelt and began to say a prayer over the dead man.
Father, he doesn't need your blessing, Ferdinand said. Come, we must go.
Noberto finished praying. Only when he made the sign of the cross over the general did he rise. He looked at Ferdinand. Where are we going?
Away, Ferdinand said. The soldiers,
he's right, Father, Aideen said. We don't know what they're going to do, but we should be somewhere else when they do it. McCaskey held on to Aideen's shoulder while he drew several painful breaths.
We've also got to let the boss know what's going on as soon as possible, he said. Where's the team?
They encountered some resistance after the flush-out, she said. They withdrew.
Can you get to them?
Aideen nodded. Can you walk?
Yes, but I'm not going with you, McCaskey said. I can't leave Maria.
Daryl, you heard what Amadori said, Aideen declared. More soldiers are on the way.
I know,
McCaskey said. He smiled faintly.
All the more reason I can't leave her.
He won't be alone, Father Noberto told her. I'll stay with him.
Putting on her mask, Aideen said, There isn't time to argue. I'll get the word out. You three, take care. McCaskey thanked her
As she turned and ran toward the grand staircase, McCaskey hobbled toward the priest.
"I'm sorry about this," he said, pointing to Amadori's body. "It was necessary."
Noberto said nothing. Ferdinand put his gun in his waistband.
"I'm going to look for my friend Juan," he said.
He regarded McCaskey.
"Thank you, sir, for ridding Spain of this would-be Caudillo."
McCaskey wasn't exactly sure what Ferdinand had said, but he got the gist of it.
"De nada," he said.
"You're welcome." Father Noberto suddenly put his hand around Ferdinand's neck. He squeezed hard.
"Padre?"
Ferdinand said, confused.
"Your friend is in there,"
Noberto said. There were tears in his eyes as he pointed toward the music room.
"He's dead."
"Juan dead? Are you certain?"
"I am certain," Noberto said. "I was with him when he died. I was with him when he confessed his sins. He died absolved of them."
Ferdinand shut his eyes. Noberto squeezed harder.
"Everyone has the right to absolution, my son, whether they have slain one or they have slain millions."
The priest released Ferdinand and turned away. He walked toward McCaskey, who had limped past them and was peering cautiously out the door. McCaskey didn't know what the exchange had been about, but it didn't sound pleasant.
"What should we do?" Noberto asked.
"I'm not sure,"
McCaskey admitted. McCaskey had no idea what was going to happen to the movement with Amadori dead. But from the way the 36 or so soldiers were massing along the southern side of the courtyard, he had a good idea what was going to happen to him and Maria and all the prisoners who were being kept here. They would become pawns in one of the most significant and dangerous hostage dramas of this century.
Thanks for listening. For more information, questions, or for bookings, please call me at area code 650-579-3742. That's 579-3742. I look forward to the opportunity of working with you. Oh, by the way, je parle français et yo hablo espagnol. Ciao!